Dick Lugar responds to attack ads. Will his ad backfire? Susan Brooks runs for Congress. Can she beat Dan Burton? Burton's ties to a fundraising scandal, the state's plan for school takeovers, and parents join the legal battle over school choice. That, plus a plan to honor veterans at the Brickyard 400 and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 22, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Indiana GOP Senator Richard Lugar began his television campaign almost 10 months before he faces Richard Murdoch in the May 2012 primary. Republican Senator Richard Lugar appears on camera in his first ad, taking issue with the job creation policies of President Obama.
He's just wrong. For 35 years, I've battled for balanced budgets and less government.
It's a message to conservatives who think the senator is too willing to negotiate with Democrats.
35 years. That's how long Richard Lugar's been in Washington. What's he done about our debt?
Count among them the Club for Growth, which began running Lugar attack ads a week ago. Former Indiana Congressman Chris Ciccola heads up the Conservative Political Action Committee.
These people are paying attention. They do understand that the deficit really matter.
Should Dick Lugar play up his time in Washington? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, an editor in the Franklin College Statehouse Bureau. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, can Dick Lugar make his time in Washington into a positive?
Well, you can't ignore his time in Washington. You know, Ponce de Leon didn't find the fountain of youth, and neither did Richard Lugar. He's been there 35 years, and he's old, okay? So he has to play up his experience because he can't portray himself as the new young voice out there. Having said that, this harkens back, it seems to me, to the 1974 campaign when he was tagged as Richard Nixon's favorite mayor, and he's trying to make sure that he's not going to be Barack Obama's favorite senator. But one of the things that has made him strong in Indiana has always been his bipartisan appeal. And when he's moving to the right to counter Richard Murdoch and the Tea Party, he's also takes the chance, it seems to me, of irritating a lot of Democrats and independents who like exactly those characteristics that he's being, attacked for.
So in this ad, he talks about his time in Washington. He shows the video of him with Ronald Reagan. And he's not gray. He's a lot thinner. I mean, he's using images that make the same point that the Club for Growth made with a very different purpose. Could this ad backfire?
I don't think so. I think experience matters. These are serious times in Washington, D.C. This is not the first rodeo for either one of these candidates, Senator Lugar or Richard Murdoch. They've both been involved in multiple campaigns and held office. So while we're discussing all these important issues, I don't think that the experience is exactly going to work against either.
You're the state Republican chairman. Do you take sides in this matter?
No.
In
one word.
No. Some of the state Republican committee members will, however.
Sure, personally, but not as a state committee.
And which candidate controls the state committee at this point?
The state chairman.
That's right.
Leaping to the defense.
There you go. Eric Holcomb in his first appearance already getting help from Ann Delaney.
Wow, mark this down.
That would be his last appearance.
All right. Richard Murdoch doesn't have the money to get on television like Dick Lugar, but he responded with a web video this week that makes fun of Luger's point here shows him with Barack Obama and has hearts on the screen. It's this cartoon.
You're right. It's described as a bromance that these two gentlemen have with hearts and so forth, and a rainbow that forms over their heads as they sort of embrace. It's an odd spot, and it's but it may get some attention simply because it's an odd spot. And as you point out, Jim, with it being a web-based spot with a price tag probably of zero beyond production cost, you can sit back the Murdoch campaign and watch the buzz.
Well, it strikes me that what Richard Lugar is doing is trying to end this primary before the end of the year.
No doubt. This is a situation that's different from some of the other times when longtime incumbents have been ousted by candidates who surprised them with a great campaign. This is a situation where Senator Lugar knows exactly what's coming after him, and he's out there trying to raise money, who advertises more than a year in advance? I mean, this is very unusual, but it's all designed to weaken his opponent to the point where Murdoch might decide this isn't worth it.
And what Murdoch's doing is trying to create a little momentum so he can help his fundraising.
Yeah, I think he needs a little more than a little momentum to help his fundraising. The only thing that's even kept him, it seems to me, alive in this is not his webcam, but Chocola and those Club for Growth ads, which, you know, it's interesting because of all the things you could say about Richard Lugar, those strike me as fundamentally unfair. I mean, is he actually saying that New York should be bankrupt? I mean, has he seen what's been accomplished there? What about all the automotive jobs that are back here? What about the fact that the GM is, when all of these loans are being repaid?
Well, Murdoch did in fact go to court to try to block
the automotive workers out of jobs. Exactly.
So and Chris Chocola not only has been buying ads, he wrote a letter to the editor this week where he says that whatever Dick Lugar is, he's not a conservative. Do you appreciate his involvement in this race?
No, there's nothing you can do about outside groups coming into states when races are perceived to be competitive. So each candidate here in Indiana, Hoosiers are a discerning lot, and they'll evaluate the candidates on what kind of positive message they are able to communicate, especially, as I said earlier, during these important times.
The Club for Growth interest, though, it is interesting because they do not choose tons of candidates. They're not one of these groups who just picks every conservative Republican and mm-hmm. hopes that one of them hits. I mean, they pick the ones they think have the best shot at winning and most embody their principles, and then they really work hard to get them elected.
Or if Chris Chocola has a score to settle. Such as not getting help from Richard Lugar the last time he ran for Congress. You get other parts of that there, too.
But they work hard for the candidates they pick.
For them, but this is the problem with the Supreme Court decision that says that groups like this are people for purposes of the mm-hmm. First Amendment.
Heard it suggested that Chris Chocola might be interested in running in this race. Anything to that?
First I've heard of that.
Yeah. It's clearly, if you look at the gun sites right now of the Lugar campaign, they're squarely on the White House in Barack Obama. And I guess that's not surprising. Ann makes the point that
Joe Donnelly strategy.
Well, and Ann makes the point that that may alienate some moderates and Democrats. But you look at the calendar, and the primary comes before the general election.
Right.
So you get that. The big question, I think, then becomes, and it will be interesting to see, when those gun sites turn from the White House and Barack Obama to Richard Murdoch. Publicly, obviously, there's been
a mailer that's already gone.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lower profile campaign that takes him on, maybe direct mail and other pieces. But when I would question, when does the Lugar campaign really unleash the attack on
air? Republicans statewide to honor Reagan's 11th commandment.
You think they will?
It won't happen.
I hope so.
It won't happen.
I think it already hasn't happened.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, Dick Lugar's 35 years in Washington are A, one sign that he's been there too long, B, a source of experience that should be rewarded, or C, an argument for term limits. Last week's question was, should Indiana keep a $1 billion surplus? 75% said yes, it's prudent. 10% said no, more spending is wiser. 15% said that's not enough. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Congressman Dan Burton has a new primary opponent this week.
Susan Brooks.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Former U.S. Attorney Susan Brooks shook hands with workers at the Hamilton County Government Complex today, a personal touch on the first day of her campaign for Congress. A one-time deputy mayor of Indianapolis, Brooks has goals.
That I'll connect with voters, really learn what's important to this district, learn what their top priorities are, and then hopefully convince them that I can be their best advocate.
To reach her ultimate goal, she must unseat 30-year incumbent Dan Burton, who narrowly survived a serious challenge in last year's GOP primary. It's a 2012 race that is getting crowded again, with John McGough already running and former Congressman David McIntosh exploring a bid.
Ruthie and I have to really pray about it, think about it, make sure that it's what we're called to do.
Brooks, now a vice president of Ivy Tech, hope she will stand out even if multiple candidates go to the post.
I think that, you know, my experiences hopefully will really distinguish me from the other candidates.
And she's running in a new 5th district that appears less favorable to Burton than the old 5th district.
All right, Eric Holcomb, we've already heard that as state chairman you don't want to get involved in primary races. But this is a case where you had a multiple candidate primary in 2010. And a lot of folks thought that there ought to be some leadership exerted to try to whittle down the field and make it a one-on-one race or a two-on-one race. You expect to get that kind of pressure this time?
It's about a surprise that there's a GOP primary in Indiana's 5th district as the police captain in Casablanca was, that there was gambling going on in Ricks. I mean, this is one of the most Republican districts in the country. We've seen this movie before. And I expect there's multiple formidable candidates in this race. So count no one out. It's a new district. It's a new game.
And you're going to be hands off.
Absolutely.
All right. Susan Brooks is a new face in terms of elected politics.
Very well qualified. There's no question about that. And the only woman, which could give her a substantial advantage in a field of four. And, of course, there's a rumor out there that Congressman Burton isn't going to run again and turn the seat over to State Senator Mike Delf, and I know they've always been close. In fact, he may even regard him, you know, as a son or something. He's that close to him. So that isn't outside the realm of possibility either. So the field may not be closed at all yet.
That rumor has been out there since before the last election.
Well, it was in
which rumor?
It was in print this time around. So I don't know. I mean, he's talked about only running one more time, one more time, one more time.
Right.
At some point, that one more time is up.
I do think it's surprising that the Republicans didn't, I don't know whether learn something is the right term, but from last time, I mean, I think there's no doubt there is some appetite among voters for an alternative to Dan Burton. But when you give voters too many alternatives, they can't focus. And you're going to end up with Dan Burton. So I'm surprised that these Republicans haven't come together in the district and decided, and they still could, and decided on which candidate maybe has the best shot to beat him.
Well, McIntosh is kind of interesting in that regard. He's started a committee, he's scheduled fundraisers, but he won't say publicly that he's committed to the race. Do you think he goes to the post?
He's saying all the things that certainly would indicate as much, and I mean, why would you open yourself to this kind of conversation if he is comfortably ensconced now where he is with his position in Washington as his in the private sector? I think this is probably more than a testing of the water. So I imagine he will get in there. I mean, Leslie, though, is exactly right. This, if there is a desire to knock off this 30-year incumbent, well, there needs to be some sort of winnowing of the field. But I remember before the last election, who was it? Was it Mike? One of the candidates actually put forth a formal plan that said, hey, let's get together and
P.E. McAllister offered to,
yeah, we'll kind of,
to mediate.
And they were going to say who raises a certain amount. I think there were various triggers, and fundraising by a certain date was maybe one of them. And, of course, everybody is all for let's narrow the field, but why don't you people go somewhere else and I'll carry the torch.
This isn't exactly the most competitive general election district, so it is all about the primary. Everybody has a right to run for office.
All right, still with Indiana Congressman Dan Burton. He received contributions from a man now accused of being a spy for the Pakistani government. Dr. Syed Fai was arrested in Washington this week, accused of illegally funneling money to members of Congress, including Burton, as well as political parties and the Obama campaign. Burton was one of the biggest recipients with $10,000. However, he contends that his contributions were legal, But if there is any doubt, he says, he will give the money to the Boy Scouts. Leslie Weidenbender, is the Burton response appropriate?
I think that it's right in line with the kinds of things that we hear all the time. I do not anticipate that this will hurt Dan Burton. We talk about this on the show all the time, these very kinds of issues, and they never seem to make an impact with the general voting population. So unless someone comes up with a really great ad that puts all this together and makes it easy for voters to understand, I don't see it making any difference.
Although Dan Burton does have a pretty plausible defense here, which is, let's see, if I did something wrong, well, then Barack Obama did something wrong, and one of my Democratic colleagues, I believe from New York, in the U.S. House from New York, did something wrong. Democratic National Committee did something wrong. The senatorial campaigns for both Republicans and Democrats. It's hard to police probably the source of these contributions, I think you're right. I mean, you'd love to have a situation where you know the source, you have a rapport with the donor, and a respect that this is all for laudable reasons. But when you're getting dollars from thousands of donors, it is a practical matter. It's kind of tough.
Yet some of those people, including the Obama campaign, said immediately that they would donate the money to charity. He had a big if in his statement. He's going to wait and see.
Sure. It happens on both sides of the aisle, as pointed out, and no one's immune from this. But I agree with Leslie. I don't. This is much ado about nothing right now.
Except maybe that he's had trouble raising money inside Indiana, so he's turning to donors in other parts of the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is what it is. I think Leslie hit the nail on the head before by saying that there is a not very high tolerance for Dan Burton anymore in that district, and that's true statewide. It makes it more difficult for him to raise money. But, having said that, unless they had a specific warning that this guy was on somebody's list, I don't see this as anything more than Tim Durham's contributions. And, he may take the governor's approach and just say, I already spent the money.
I hear the governor's talking with the bankruptcy trustee. All right.
Seven
Indiana schools were identified as turnaround targets this week. They could be at risk of a state takeover. Six of them are Indianapolis public schools. Arlington, Broadrup, Emanuel High School, and Washington and Howe High Schools, along with Emma Donnan Middle School, will learn next month what intervention measures will be taken. John Schwanes, does this amount to double secret probation for those schools?
Well, there does seem to be any number of hurdles, hoops, and sort of the maze that this process is going through. And I guess that's the way it was set up by the General Assembly in terms of the public accountability statutes. But something clearly is going to happen.
Five options that range from coming up with more ideas for improvement to a state takeover.
Right. And what the announcement from the state superintendent was, The scores are out. We've seen it. Something's going to happen. Now, this is not to say IPS is going to go down, you might say, without a fight, because just as soon as the announcement came from the superintendent's office, you saw Gene White, the superintendent of Indianapolis Public Schools, saying, not so fast. There's a problem with the way you were calculating these scores because you included some eighth grade scores and high schools I'm talking about here.
Seventh grade scores. But Tony Bennett, the state school superintendent, is discouraging appeals. Tell me this. If the state's going to get in the takeover game, should it act more quickly?
You mean should it not wait so many years to jump in?
These folks have been on probation for 6 years.
That's the law.
Now,
again,
I understand that's the law, but now you get an announcement, and then a month later you get a plan, and they don't take over.
Well, I mean, I think
take over, it's not till next year.
I think the idea, though, is to give school districts a chance to try to rectify the situation themselves. I'm not sure that we would want the state taking over lots and lots of schools across the state. So I think the process does have to be sufficiently long that the state doesn't just basically get into the business of running schools. What's going to be interesting to see, though, is how successful the state can be at their takeover or whatever they do. I think it's hard. There are a lot of people who are for this, a lot of people who are against it. But really, we don't actually know yet how successful this kind of thing can be. And I mean, that's really going to be the interesting part.
And some of the entities that they've identified, if they do take over these schools, have had mixed results in other states. So whatever system they come up with has got to be readily transparent to show progress that everybody recognizes, doesn't interfere with schools like Broad Ripple, which has made tremendous progress in the last year or two, and nobody gets rich off. I mean, those are the three criteria I think are important there, and there's a substantial risk involved in that for takeovers.
Okay. Yesterday, there were 18 schools that were in jeopardy. Now it's down to seven, and six of them are in the Indianapolis Public School District. Is this an indictment of IPS?
No, it's a call for accountability. There's nothing new about this. Public Law 221 came about in 1999, championed by Democrat Representative Greg Porter. If there's anything at all new about it, is we're moving forward. And as it's been pointed out, some schools have moved off the watch list. And the takeover is just one of five options we need to keep in mind. But we can't back away from the accountability aspect of this. It's the whole purpose.
Should they move forward more quickly?
Well, there's a lot of thought leaders in the community, the Indiana community, that believe so.
Yeah, it's the same. You're making the same argument that you hear in capital punishment debates. You know, why do we let these things drag on so long? But the reason they drag on so long is the consequences are profound. For reasons have been discussed here. You don't want to jump into something that's going to blow up in your face and be an educational disaster in terms of a reform that's worse than what you had to begin.
Yeah, I mean, there are kids' education, kids' lives here at stake, sure. And these are some of the hardest to educate kids that there are. I mean, if you look at, it's easy to point the finger at Indianapolis, but if you look at it more broadly at the schools that were in danger of being taken over, you'll find that the schools are in all the places where you have the poorest kids, the kids who's less likely to be in intact families, kids where parents are more likely to be unemployed and maybe don't even know how to read.
Children with disabilities.
Absolutely.
As well.
All right, moving on. The Washington-based Institute for Justice has joined the legal battle over school choice in Indiana. Lawyers from the Institute now represent Heather Coffey, a Pike Township mother of three who sends her children to private school. The Indiana State Teachers Association has filed suit to block a new law creating school vouchers. Coffey is supporting state government's efforts to preserve the law.
I wanted to be the voice in the face that this program does work. I've sacrificed for years in many ways financially to make sure that my children were able to go to a private school.
And Eleni, does state government need the legal help?
State government would need a new constitution. That's the problem with this. The state constitution for Indiana is very explicit. You can't use general fund dollars to support religious institutions, and you can't require citizens to pay for support of religions that they don't agree with. And it is pretty darn clear cut, plus the overall mandate to have a common school system. So you've got three different provisions there. And, you know, I know the state legislature and then the Republican control thinks that it's from God's lips to their ears, but they should read the Constitution before they pass laws.
You're kind of feisty today.
Really? That's so unusual for me.
There you have it. It's interesting, isn't it, that you got an outside group coming here to help out the state government?
Well, I don't. I'm again not surprised that the NEA, Washington D.C., and their Washington D.C. law firm is coming into the state of Indiana.
They're on the other side,
right? Trying to settle a score here. It's very political.
But the Institute for Justice, basically, if the NEA wants to start a fight anywhere in the country, they want to go be part of it, right?
Well, Ann and I disagree, or we interpret the Constitution differently. I believe that the Constitution says "and," which is underscored, "and provide for funding for common education throughout Indiana."
Well, do you disagree with the prohibition against giving money?
I believe the courts are on our side.
Well, the legal argument that's been made is that the money goes to the student and not to
the
school.
That the check
no,
is
the money
payable
does. In Cleveland, we decided this. 99% of funding in a Cleveland case went to a Catholic school, and the courts decided that the money goes to the parents, not the school.
The check is made out to both of them.
Do you agree with the 21st century scholars program or the Frank O'Bannon grant that you can use state dollars to go to?
There's a difference.
What the lawyer said.
The difference is the way the legislature passed the statute. The checks are made payable to the school and the parents.
Well,
there's
no surprise, are you saying then that it would be okay if they made the check out to the parent instead?
If the check goes to...
would that be all right?
I think you'd have a stronger argument if it went only to the parent. The problem with that is, how do you enforce it? How do you know that that's what it's going for and not who knows what else?
I just anticipate that it would still be a big fight, no matter who the
check. Maybe,
but
that's
at least
what I'm
the tenor
of the discussion explains it answers your question about why people from outside the state are becoming involved. This is such a hot button issue. And it's, yes, this particular battle is unfolding in Indiana, but this is a war, a national war of two very strong opinions about the role that that public funding should play in parochial and other private schools. And so this is just one skirmish on a national debate, really.
Finally, it's been 20 years since Operation Desert Storm and Operation Desert Shield in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is honoring those who served with a special ceremony at this year's Brickyard 400. 43 race cars will do a parade lap during the opening ceremonies. Each of those cars will carry two veterans from the Gulf War. Dozens of other vets will take part in the ceremonies, too. And veterans in uniform can get free tickets to the Brickyard 400 from the Speedway. Eric Holcomb, you're going to put on your uniform.
No, but I will take off my hat and salute him. I can't think of a more patriotic place in America than a NASCAR race in Indiana to acknowledge what these heroes accomplished.
Well, you got to like the Speedway's marketing too. I mean, the way they've got Memorial Day weekend wrapped up, and now they're trying to make sure that it continues to their other events.
And you have a problem with that?
I don't. I think it's brilliant.
Well, good.
I think it's brilliant.
There you go. It is.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of Franklin College. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.